Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. These messages are intended to spark your own reflections and conversations all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime along with other resources and ways to keep the conversation going at fabricmpls.com/scraps.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Greg, and we're glad to have you here with us today. And also, hi to everybody who's listening to this at a different time and place on our podcast. Joe Davis, who has done some work with us over the years and do wonderful art, poetry, music, all that stuff.
All that jazz.
But we invited him not just because to do music for us today, but he's also a cultural architect. I mean, he's really dedicated his life to how he can be shaping the world by shaping people, which is kind of what we're going to be talking about today. So we'll get into that in a minute. And last week, if you're here, we were talking about building our city from the bricks and mortar side, the bridges, roads, structures side, and how justice and building our city in a way that is good for all, in other words, creating a social fabric that doesn't have any flaws in it, because as soon as there are flaws in our social fabric, it all starts falling apart. Today we want to talk about some of the softer side, and we also have Callie here again, Callie Plago, who is helping us. And so we welcome your questions. If you go to your phone, for those of you who have never done this before, if you go to menti.com, this come up and it'll ask you for a code, 574496, and you submit that and bingo, you're going to find that. You'll find there's a place for questions, and then later we're going to do some word clouding on ideas and questions you have on ideas that you have personally about how some of the stuff we're going to be talking about. So, Joe, you've been involved in community for a long time, and I living in North Minneapolis, working with various organizations, churches, and others, and it's led you to this idea of being a cultural architect.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's actually like one of my favorite things to talk about. I get really, really excited about it because when I talk with people, some like new people, I don't always like to ask, like, what do you do for a living? I like to ask, what do you do that makes you feel alive? What do you do that gives you joy? And that's where I think the cultural architecture comes from, is our passions and our gifts, and where those intersect to create our purpose. And so cultural architecture, like just breaking it down, everything is culture. We're immersed in culture. And architecture just means to build or to shape. So how are we individually and collectively shaping the world around us through our gifts, our passions, our purpose?
Yeah. So do you think the cultural side of architecture is as important as the physical side of architecture?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're deeply, deeply, deeply interconnected.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, inextricably. You can't even, like, they go together.
Yeah, and I think that point was made pretty clear last week when talking about, well, you know, those are just bridges or these are just highways going through neighborhoods. Mm. Why that highway? Why that neighborhood? I mean, if there are cultural questions behind it all. And I'm a big believer that thought always precedes action, you know. Mm. Ideas precede design. And so whether we're consciously or unconsciously. And you'll also find you've got a Sunday paper if you came in, and hopefully someone gave you on the backside is there's a place for an outline, some notes, and you can fill in. It's pretty vague here. I think it'll probably cover some of the main things we want to talk about. But one of the things in our conversation talking about this, Joe, that really came up is that this idea that we are all cultural architects, whether we know it or not.
Yeah. I think every single day, like even in the one of the first pieces I shared, I say we all got the spark. I just came to fan the flame. We all got a part in whatever we can make. So I think each of us, every single day, every single moment, we're shaping culture, whether we know it or not. Either we're doing it with intentionality, consciously with purpose, or we're just going along with the program that we've been given, that we've been inherited. And so we have a choice. Mm. Are we gonna create or gonna shape with intentionality and purpose and actually, like, you know, have some time and space to think about what we wanna imbue in the world creatively, or are we just gonna go along with status quo? With the motion. And sometimes that can be like a mindless autopilot default. I think that we all fall into it. I know I definitely fall into it as well. But at my best, especially as an artist, I'm being intentional about like the world that I'm in and the environment that we're shaping together.
So, if I can speak for all of us, why not?
But I would say
it's probably a pretty common thing here is that one of the reasons that we're part of Fabric is that we want to be intentional. Like, we realize, I'm shaping stuff every day, and I want to be a little bit more reflective. I want to be more intentional. It doesn't mean I can't make mistakes. It doesn't mean that I'm going to be perfect. But I want to be aware of what I'm actually doing, and I want to make choices about it that line up with my deepest values. So the first question...
I have a question.
You may.
The perfect moment. Could each of you list maybe two of your things that are the practical ways or...
Focus of your cultural
architecture.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just shared it. I'm an artist primarily. That's like my my core medium for cultural architecture. I believe in the power for music and poetry and theater to transform spaces. We just experienced that together this morning. And it's not just like about me. I'm a small part in that, but I'm highly collaborative in that capacity. So when I'm creating art, I like to do it with community, with friends, and see what's like brought to life in that coalescing of creativity. So,
I'll answer it too. We're gonna drill down to this, so kind of the next point on the outline. So someone here is smarter than us. But I would say my main tools, it'd be interesting to have you guys tell me that. What do you think my main tools are? But I would say it's words and ideas and community. Mm-hmm. And so I like to find words, I like to find ideas and build around them with words and experiences that disrupt people's lives by making them live that out in community with other people. That's my vision of what church is. That's why I became a pastor. That's why I started this community, to do exactly that. And that's what it's about for me. So, but you know, one of the things, we're gonna talk more about that. These are the tools that we have to do cultural architecture. Mm-hmm. But I wanna talk first about what is our vision, because like we said, I said, ideas precede action. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be cultural architects, what is our vision? What are you intentional about? Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to say what your vision for the world you want to create. That's actually the first fill-in. What does the world you want to create look like? Mm-hmm. What does the world you want to create look like? But I don't want you to tell us what it is, because that'll prejudice all of our thinking about the worlds that we want to create. But what are the categories that you think of? Like, say, In making a world that is more like I want it to be, these are the kinds of things we need to consider. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I think so. If I'm understanding you, some of the things I think about are like individually, like what are we creating? What type of like practices do we have individually in our lives, like in our homes? And then how are we taking those practices and connecting relationally with other people in communities and in schools, in churches and community spaces, places of power, governance, like how are we taking those practices? Kind of like fractals, like something small getting bigger and larger.
Yeah. Start with yourself, expand to others.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's the way I think about transformation and building and connecting. So
on your outlines, you'll see a little box to the right of that, and that's just a place for you to jot like words, bullet points of things that you think about. But at this point, too, invite you to be a part of a word cloud. So what the world that you would like to create, what does it look like?
Yeah. This is so cool to watch this happen in real time. It's like a physical manifestation of what's going on in our brains, like shooting it out. It's cool. I feel like there should be sound effects to go with this, too. Like, shoo, shoo, shoo.
That's your...
Yeah,
Dahlia, can you?
Where's you?
So the more a word is repeated, the larger the word gets. Yeah. For those of you listening on the podcast, the big words are sustainable, love, trust, connection, caring, authentic, then peace, equity, peaceful, connected, safe.
Looks like growth was like getting bigger.
Right.
It's growing. Growth is growing.
It is. Right, it's going to pass them up. There's quite a few different versions of non-judgmentalness, which would add up to being a little bit bigger. But connection, trust, growth, love, sustainable, those are big words there. Keep on going on that. And
I want to live in that world.
Yeah.
That makes me excited. That's cool.
You were talking about intentionality being important about that. And this is a point that I want to hammer on a little bit, even though it's been made already. But this idea that you are a cultural architect right now, whether you mean to or not, whether you're intentional about it, whether you have a vision or not, you are doing it. Last week, when Charles was talking, one of the things that he pointed out is a lot of our impact through the infrastructure of a city that is inequitable is so generational. In other words, it started in the 1920s, at least, the 35W side of it. It's before that even. But the idea is, the way our neighborhoods are arranged, which are not equitable, has been that way since our grandparents were here, if your grandparents were here. And so for us, it's just plain normal. And so we don't think about the fact that there's something wrong here. It's simply the way things are. And we just keep repeating it. We're being cultural architects around our physical environment, using our physical environment, and not aware that it's anything more than just the way things are. But it actually is an intention. There's something going on there that we are furthering. So how would I be intentional about a new way of my neighborhood embracing all people and being actually accessible and inviting, welcoming, hospitable to all people? So this idea of having a plan and spending time thinking about my vision for the world that I would want to create would have these top three things. And then asking the question, am I doing that?
Right.
The next question there is, what tools do you have to do it? And that was the question that someone put to Joe and I here. There's a little box here right now. You can start writing your ideas. You can also send questions into Callie. But then we'll do a word cloud on that too. What happens when people are exposed to art? Why is that such an effective tool?
Yeah, I think it impacts us at a really, really deep level that we may not even always be aware of. Even scientifically, when you get to the science about it, it accesses a different part of our brain, a different part of our bodies. But on the surface, it's just a really good community builder. I had never met a person who said they didn't like music. Maybe you're out there, I don't know, everyone just loves music in some capacity. It could be whatever genre, but there's just something that flows within the essence of our being that is artful, that is creative, that brings us together through the arts. And so I think that's what's so powerful about it.
I think it has this ability to open us up. Like you said, it works in a different part of our brain. And so we respond to it in ways that can even surprise us. It opens us to opinions and perspectives we hadn't considered before.
Mm-hmm. Question. So what is the meaning of life? And I think this is pointed at you, Greg. 42 is not a good answer.
I was going to say 42. But I think it has to do, it's interesting. So the world I want to create, what were the big words? It's sustainable, it's trusting, it's loving, it's growing. Mm-hmm. So to me, that would say that the meaning of life must be somewhere in those words. I think that's kind of a consensus that we had there.
Yeah, we're naturally meaning makers. Human beings make meaning out of all things. We storify our lives. We storify things that we encounter on a regular basis. When you just see a scene of people sitting around, if there's no context given, your brain is automatically going to make a story, even if it's not true. You're just going to make up stories. And so I think that's another beautiful, powerful part of being human is.
I'm seeing a lot of the softer, the listen. Cultural sort of things.
Dab on the haters. Who's out there dabbing on them?
There we go.
Yeah. Was that you?
Teaching, leading. Go ahead, Kelly.
While we're watching this word cloud. So you guys both have an inherent audience because of your platform that you have as a pastor and an artist. How can those of us without an audience impact culture effectively?
All I was going to say simply is that I think everyone has an artist. If they're a human being and they're interacting with other human beings, that's their audience. It's not even really a question of size or scale. It's whoever you encounter, whoever you interact with on a regular basis, you're going to impact those people. You're going to impact those spaces. And what you're bringing to that space is how it's going to be transformed. Whatever type of energy, if you're bringing questions, and if you're bringing you know, joy, if you're bringing peace, like whatever vibratory information, whatever way of being, way of thinking, like all of that is going to transform every space.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a big thing, right? Well, I think sometimes we get lost in the sauce. I'm like, oh, it's got to be so big. Like,
well, we also think it has to be overt. Like, I have to be standing here and talking to you. Like, you know, this is influencing. And that's probably a powerful thing. But I think the more implicit influence is just as important. Like, what rubs off? Because you are the kind of person, how do you influence the people around you? It may be unconscious even on that part.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, as parents, we shape our children less by what we say and more by who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do the same thing at work. We do the same thing with our friends. We do the same thing in our neighborhoods.
Yes.
It's who we are. I mean, a basic concept that we work with here is that I always refer to as surface area. Like, what is your surface area out in the world? And so to think about us as a community having impact in the world, we have the least impact when we're gathered together here because our surface area is just right here. But when all of us go out into the world and we're at our jobs and at school with our friends, your individual surface area is smaller, but accumulatively, we have an enormous surface area. We are touching thousands of people at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is really where we are powerful. Which then dictates why do we do what we do here? We do stuff here to help you be intentional and purposeful in the impact that you're going to have with your surface area out there. And again, most of it's going to be subtle and maybe unintentional, unconscious. It's because of who you are, not because of what you say or what you're teaching or what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it'll flow out of that. Like everything else will flow out of who you are.
Right.
Like, yeah. I like to say, we may not feel like we're all powerful, but we are all powerful. You got to sit with that for a second, but like, we all have something we can do within our sphere of influence to create the world that we want to live in. So.
That's right. Yeah.
What would you say to somebody who has difficult thoughts and feelings they're working through to help them remember they are an artist and a cultural architect? And my personal aside before you guys, they didn't know I was going to be presenting today too, is because it's music. I've been through this difficult thoughts and feelings recently, and my portal to getting back some agency was through music, and just wanted to say that it's, you know, listening to songs, but also the message that's imparted in lyrics and poetry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is, like, you're not broken, you're not defective. Like, whatever thoughts or feelings you're having are, like, part of your experience, and they're valid, and they matter. And there's a meaning in that, too, that you get to find for yourself and find a community in relationship with other people. And I think that's another thing that I've found really healing about being in relationship and being in community is that when I'm experiencing, like, thoughts that may be difficult or something happened that's difficult, when I'm with other people, that they can help remind me. When I can't remind myself, they can remind me of my agency, of my power, of the possibility.
And I think we focus way too much on our strengths and on the what I can do sort of stuff to think I'm going to impact the world, I'm going to grow because of what I can do. And that's good, but I think the stuff that hurts us is equally able to empower us to be actors in the world. One of the things we say is, you know, your greatest ministry, to use that word, your greatest ability to impact the world is not going to come from your greatest strength, but from your greatest hurt. And for us to value that, which it doesn't justify it, it doesn't make it worthwhile, it doesn't make you say, oh, I'm sure glad that horrible thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. But you will find, as you sit with that it grows something in you that is incomparable. You know, and that's a tough message because no one wants that to happen to get that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if we accept that and don't just try to get rid of it, try to push it out of the way and recover from it, but we grow through it, I think that's powerful stuff. And that's, again, Joe is absolutely right. That's where we need other people, because when I'm there in that grief place or that hurting place, I can't have that perspective. I can say it to myself, but I don't believe it.
Right.
But the people walking along with me, they can, you know, hold my hand, they can walk with me until I finally begin to you know, reap some of that. And so the next question is, so if you have this vision of the world you want to create, and these are your tools to do it, what's stopping you? What are the things that keep you from creating the world that you know you want to create? You know, having that influence with your spouse, your family, your friends, your schoolmates, your neighbor, our community. What keeps you from actually doing it? There's a box for you. You can put some of your ideas in, and there's going to be another mentee. Oh, there we go. So it's going. Mm. So I like to. I don't create the world I want to because I am. And maybe you can put the word to, T-O-O, in there if you want. I don't create the world I want because I am. We got some of the words for you listening. I'm scared. I'm busy. Shameful. I'm afraid. Busy and too busy. I'm biased. I'm oppressed. I'm unequal. I'm anxious. Sad. Scared is getting big. Scared and busy. Insecure. Joe, why don't you do it, huh?
Yeah. All those things up there, too. I feel it. I feel it. I feel it. I can think of a couple of things in particular. Like, certainly there are, you know, we talked about the system that we inherited, right? And there's, within that system, there's inequities, there's exploitation and oppression, and those things work against me. And largely a part of my work is to change those things. But even within myself, what I experience, I think, I have this aversion to discomfort. And so because of that aversion, I'll like distract myself, or I'll procrastinate, or I'll run to other things that take me away from what I know deep down inside that I'm actually called to be doing. But I run to those things sometimes instead of sitting and listening and hearing the wisdom in the wounds or the power in the pain. Like I kind of run from that sometimes because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good. I don't want to sit there. But one of the biggest learnings in my life has been to not run and to be present and to be open to what is moving in that space of discomfort. Because this can be really generative. But that's usually what keeps me sure. from doing what I want.
Kelly, did you anything you wanted to interject or?
There's a good sort of corollary. Sort of, it's called a mic check. Whoever sent it in. So I'll just read it. Those who have experienced trauma may not want to hear that that's their greatest strength. Yes, it may make us stronger, but be careful about how we talk about that, and trauma survivors shouldn't have to always engage it or use it.
Yeah,
that's real.
I think it's something you have to discover for yourself. For someone to be telling you that,
right,
is a little bit, helpful.
I think about I've been looking at a lot of studies around intergenerational trauma, and how sometimes the trauma that we have in our bodies, we didn't even experience it for the first time in our lifetime, but we inherited it from our ancestors. Like something happened to your great-great-grandparents and it was in their bodies and they passed it down to you through their genes. It's called epigenetics. And so what I've been looking at with that is some of the leading experts on it are saying, like, yes, they passed down that trauma that still lives with us, but also they also pass down resilience and healing. And so, you know, there's these cycles that we get caught up in, and we hear the phrase like hurt people, but also like healed people. And so I think it's kind of like this parallel journey. Certainly not to dismiss the trauma at all, because I think we all have different levels of trauma that we've experienced in our lives. But there's also a resilience that's there as well. And
That's a great segue. Just a lot of groups in our community are reading My Grandmother's Hands right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's talking about that specifically. But if you're interested in knowing more about that, just talk to any of us and we'll get you connected with people who are reading it, or go to our website. You'll find some information about that. You have a song you want to do?
Yeah, yeah. When I think about creating this world, we need each other to do it. Even to find that healing that we're talking about, we need each other. And when we create a space and we say all are welcome, or we love everyone, like, who do you really mean when we say all, when we say everyone? I want to write a piece that explored that more, Because I think there's a difference in saying, like, you're invited, and in saying, like, we created this with you in mind. Because this is something that I try to ask myself in every space that I enter. Who's here and who's not here? What are the reasons for that? And how are we making space for all voices and for all people? Who is your everyone? Is only those in the country you were born in, or migrant workers whose customs and cultures may seem foreign? Is only those in our church Sunday morning, or the non-religious, or Jews, or Muslims, or Mormons? Who is your everyone? Where does our everyone begin or end? Is only those with our language, our skin? Can our vision extend beyond us versus them? Towards a bridge of love, where true justice bends. Where all our walls crumble and fall between those people who make us feel so uncomfortable. Different and distant, they seem so unlovable. But come closer, you'll discover that God loves them too. No more or no less, but just as much as you. This is the truth we often may forget. There is a table that offers all a place to sit, that of a transformational relationship. And we celebrate everyone's human sacredness. For we are them, and they are us, all created in God's image. Who is your everyone?
I wanna know who is your everyone.
Who decides?
Who decides who can cross all these lines that we've drawn? Yeah. Who is your everyone?
Yeah. You guys sound great.
Who is your everyone?
Ha. I really wanna know.
I wanna know
yeah.
who is your everyone. Who decides who belongs at the edge of our hearts? Who is your everyone?
Thanks. Well, we've just got one little piece, and I think we got one more song, and we'll let you go. But I think where we got to so far is missing the last piece, and that is, so I've got a vision for the world I want to create. I start understanding what my tools are. I start figuring out what's stopping me, and I face that. And then the last piece is, what's my plan?
Yeah.
Right? Get a plan going.
You know, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail.
Boo. Can write that down here.
He's taking notes.
One piece, and I want to make sure we talk about this, is a technical piece, and that is the IDI, the Intercultural Development Inventory. Who's familiar with that? Who's quite a bunch of people taking it, perhaps? So if you want to add tools to your inability, you know, tools that will help you get over what's stopping you, the IDI, I believe, is one of the things that'll do it, because it I can see this. Do you remember the word cloud was full of like these angsty things, you know, shame, fear, all that sort of stuff. And and I think we need to get stuff out in the open. The IDI does it.
Yeah.
And I bring it up. I don't know much about it. Joe knows a lot about it and actually administers it. And actually hoping to be using it this fall when we're doing something called Hearing Voices. And spending some weeks diving into this as a tool that all of you can participate in. But tell us a little bit about the IDI.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about it is how it increases our self-awareness and is really self-guided. It's all based on your lived experience. And so what it is, it's an assessment you can take. You can take it individually or as an organization. And it'll show you every human being has a certain level of intercultural competency. Ways that we've developed to engage with sameness and difference. And so the IDI can tell where you are in your intercultural competency. And it's not about another thing I really love about it, it's not about guilt, blame, or shame, like wherever you are with your level of competency. It's about making the space for like immersive, embodied learning opportunities. So wherever you are, they say that's where you are where you are, but you can also grow and develop. And one thing that often happens when people take this assessment is they're not where they want to be. And so there's, like, it happens a lot. I've done a lot of these. So I'm a qualified administrator. If anyone ever wants to take the assessment, we can talk. And like I said, maybe do some more organizational stuff.
You're doing that.
But every single time that I've administered the assessment, there's what we call an orientation gap. And so that means their perceived orientation is not where the tool places their orientation. I like to call it, instead of the developmental gap or the perceived orientation, I like to call it the aspired orientation. Because the human brain is designed to be aspirational. We're all, you know, we're trying to reach, trying to grow, trying to develop, but we're going to fall short. That's just what happens. And so again, like, as I said, it's not about guilt, blame, or shame. It's about recognizing that gap and then also seeing the opportunity. And the tool allows you to develop a plan about how to close that gap. And so that's my favorite part about it, really, is giving people that space and saying, hey, these are some steps, some actual tangible steps, because it's all about your lived experience. So things that you're already doing or things that you want to do more of, because you got to get your skin in the game. You got to put your body into it. It's not just about getting stuck in our heads and over-intellectualizing things, because that's where we get caught sometimes. But it's about having these experiences that where you go to places, you interact with people, you disrupt those patterns that have formerly gotten you stuck. So immersive bodily experiences.
I know I first heard about the IDI a bunch of years ago, and my reaction was sort of like, I know I should take that, and I'm afraid to because I don't want to know that about myself.
Right? Oh,
and
happens to everybody.
I really appreciate you, the way you're talking about it is that, knowledge is information, or knowledge is power, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. if I understand where I'm at, then I can figure out what's to be Nick, can do Nick's. And you said, too, I think if I remember right, you said you've taken it four times.
I have. Yeah, I've taken it multiple times, and I've had a gap, but I've also seen the gap close when you actually work your plan. And the way I talk about the plan is it's like if you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you your health stats and like these are the things that your body is doing and here's your workout plan. That workout plan is just words on a paper unless you're actually doing the push-ups, unless you're actually taking the walk or actually going through the dietary plan. And so when you actually work the plan, you can and will see a close in the gap and you see some growth and development.
And there's, no one doesn't have blind spots, discriminatory ideas, they're so deeply
biases
embedded, we will never get rid of them all.
Mm-hmm. It's about awareness.
It's about awareness. It's
how you respond to the awareness.
Right, creating capacity and so mm-hmm. on to deal with that. So I think that's important. And I just want to, you said that three word line so quickly that it just zips by us. It's on the screen now. Immersive embodied training or mm-hmm. learning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And immersive embodied learning, I mean, that is. Like where can I go? I have to experience this. I have to immerse myself in it in order to actually start feeling the change. And I think that is how we get to know each other, right? I mean, that's how we start breaking down these barriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes it'll have to be uncomfortable. Like that's also a really important component to this whole thing is the discomfort piece. Like we were talking about the book My Grandmother's Hands with Resmaa Manakin, and Resmaa Manakin is a local therapist. And he says that in order to build your capacity, you have to do something that sucks every day. Like, engage suffering's edge. Like, that's how you build capacity. Not just by, strengthening what you're already good at, but going towards those things, like, confronting those fears, those things that, make you feel some type of way inside. You're like, ugh, but you got to keep doing it. And that's how you're going to get stronger. That's how you're going to grow and build capacity and increase your intercultural competency.
Getting out of our comfort zone and entering into that growth zone.
There's no growth outside of
discomfort, right? Yeah. That's right.
I would have a question to summarize.
Yeah.
So if you're ready for that.
Yep.
Please.
If you could each answer, what is giving you hope as cultural architects?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's the youth. I do a lot of youth work. I go to a lot of high schools, a lot of elementary schools. And when I go there and I look in their eyes and I see the vibrancy and the joy, the creativity, the brilliance, the genius that they have, that's inspiring. I'm like, we're going to be okay. Like if I'm looking at the news or something, I'm scrolling through, I think I would say that can lead you in a state of perpetual anxiety and depression, just looking at all the things out in the world. But then when you see this, that disrupts that. You're like, yes, we're going to be okay. We're going to be all right. There's hope in the world. Because some of these kids that I'm working with are saying and doing things that I wasn't saying and doing when I was their age. And they just really have a way about them that reassures me that we're going to be in good hands. So,
I mean, it's people. I would say the same thing. Yeah. I mean, it's you guys. The people that are willing to commit to saying, I want my life to be about growth and I'm going to do it with other people because I need that friendly mutual accountability and that support to do it. And then I hearing the stories of what you guys are doing in the world around you and knowing that this isn't the only place that that's going on. So, I just think there's a lot of reason to hope. And it doesn't mean, everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not what hope means. It means there's a lot of work to do, and you know the arc of history is bending towards justice. So,
thanks for listening. We hope you take this conversation and keep it going. If we are adding value to your life, we appreciate your support of this work so we can engage more people in these conversations that matter for their real lives too. You can do that at fabricmpls.com/give. We'd also love to have you join us any Sunday morning at 10:30 at Field Community School in Minneapolis. That's at 4645 4th Avenue South. There are opportunities for kids of all ages to connect to. Learn more by searching Fabric Minneapolis.